With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, it's Bobby Sylvester, and we've got a high upside running back show coming up with Justin Boone of thescore.com. But first, I want to remind you all about the Amari Cooper signed jersey giveaway. It ends Sunday. All you have to do to enter is subscribe and review us on iTunes, then send a screenshot to contest@fantasypros.com. That's going to enter you into the giveaway and all future giveaways for the season. And I know which ones are coming up. They're pretty awesome. So make sure you get this submitted in time for the contest. Please help support pristineauction.com by taking a look at their site and seeing what they have for you, whether it's a signed Walter Payton helmet or the Eddie Vedder signed album I saw this morning. Please let them know Fantasy Pro sent you so we can keep doing these giveaways. Again, that's pristineauction.com. All right, let's talk some football. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester with Mike Tagliere, as always. We have all kinds of rookie running back news to chat about this show. It's going to be a blast, Tags.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to not have Jake on the show so I don't have to leave early. Jake's takes were just getting too hot for me. I needed to get out of the show. But in all reality, they were doing some work in my area and apparently it was affecting my internet. So I apologize to everybody for not being able to finish out that show and argue with Bobby and Jake for the remainder of it, because there was definitely some guys that we would have argued about. So I'm sure we'll have Jake on again to argue with him some more.
Yeah, definitely. And our guest today is Justin Boone of thescore.com, who seems to always be a top 10 most accurate expert out of well over 100 experts. Justin, thanks for coming on the show.
I appreciate you guys having me. And I got some bad news for Tags, actually. My family calls me Jake. That is my nickname. So you're trying to get away from Jakes, but you might have run into another one here.
Oh, two Jakes don't make a right.
So guys, I'm feeling really good. Like, it's only 10 o'clock when we're recording this, my time. I already got a nap in today, so it's going to be a good show.
You got a nap in? What are you talking about? I got up, I hopped on the SiriusXM show with John Hansen at 7:30 our time, and I've been up since then trying to figure out email stuff and go through and answer a bunch of questions that people have been sending into the mailbag. So a nap. Wow, Bobby.
The radio show I was on this morning was at 7:10 our time, so maybe if you would have woke up a little earlier, you could have got a nap in too.
You need to relish this time, Bobby, because Bobby, as if you guys don't know listening, Bobby's got a child on the way. What are we, two or 3 weeks out?
It's coming, man. I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks, something like that.
I don't know. You know. Yeah. Don't lie.
We have a guy on our football team who actually, I think that he planned their pregnancy around the football season so that they had the baby in April and they didn't have to worry about it during the year. So
yeah, man, people do that.
For sure. No, people have asked me the same question. My son was born right in between the conference championships and the Super Bowl. So I told him he was already off on the good foot with me. It's just, I think the thing is like you figure 9 months time. That's the time when fantasy writers have the most time, right? So that's I guess when we make babies.
So we're going to be this is hard to move on from that. So we're going to be chatting about high upside running backs, and there's a few solid questions from the listener mailbag, but we have to at least explore this Joe Mixon headline. Tags, why don't you tell us about the news and what you make of it?
All right, so it became a big thing on Twitter yesterday because I'm the one who actually saw the news. I put it up on our site and everything like that. And so what happened is Jeremy Hill is listed on the Bengals' first depth chart that they released. Jeremy Hill is the starter. Gio Bernard is number two. And then Joe Mixon is actually behind Cedric Pierman as third on the depth depth chart. So what do I take from this? I take it as that Joe Mixon's not being given the job. Now, granted, this is a normal practice among NFL head coaches when it comes to, you know, making a rookie earn his stripes, and they're the Bengals, go figure. But at the same time, these are two running backs who have been prevalent for a long time when it comes to Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard. I've been saying for a long time, we argued this with Jake, we argued it with Matt Camp. I told you guys that I don't think that we can completely cross off Jeremy Hill, especially when it comes to the goal line work. And on top of that, Gio Bernard is a guy that's garnished, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15 touches per week when he's been healthy, and that was with Jeremy Hill on the field. So when you add Mixon to this list of running backs, it's tough for me to project him for, you know, second or third round numbers. It's really tough to do that. So when I see this depth chart, it just furthers my weariness of staying away from Joe Mixon. Do I think that he is the best talent on the team? I absolutely do. And I think that he will earn the starting job as time goes on. But that does not change the fact that this is still going to be somewhat of a timeshare in Cincinnati. So again, I am not going to own any of him if he's being drafted in the second or third round. And Justin, I'm curious to hear your take, being one of the most accurate experts that we have on the site.
I really like Mixon coming out, but I completely agree with you. Second, third round just seems crazy to me. Now, I'm hoping, the interesting thing about this news is I'm hoping it's going to actually knock his ADP down a little bit. And now maybe we will get him in the fourth and fifth, which is a spot that I'm absolutely willing to take him. But as far as Jeremy Hill goes, I mean, we've seen everything from him already. He's not particularly inspiring, you know, and that was when he was playing behind the Cincy line when they were actually good. Now we're looking at a Cincinnati line that I think is going to be one of the worst in the league. So I really don't think Hill inspires much confidence at all. Gio Bernard, on the other hand, we were all pretty surprised, I think, that when he showed up to camp and he was there day one as a full participant. And Gio actually has some elite skills, mostly as a pass catcher, but I think he could factor in more. Now, unfortunately for Gio, Mixon is a pretty good pass catcher himself. But I think if looking at it, you know, everyone's worried that Hill's going to, you know, be involved at the goal line. It is possible, and it might even start out, you know, the first couple weeks of the season. But Mixon is, you know, he's an elusive runner. You know, he's going to make people miss, and Cincinnati's going to need that this year because, like we said, that line no longer has, you know, Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler. Those guys aren't up front blocking anymore. So I don't put much stock in the depth chart at all. I find it funny when everybody kind of overreacts at the beginning of the year to all these, and it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
There was a few, and we're going to talk about them. There was a few yesterday that everybody kind of, you know, went crazy about. But yeah, if Mixon falls to the fourth or to the fifth round, I think everyone should bite on that, because I think as the year goes on, we're going to see him emerge. That Cincinnati coaching staff is going to realize that he is by far the best back there. And their offense, I think, is going to need him. You know, they have weapons in the passing game, but they haven't gotten that much out of that running game. And I think Mixon's going to be able to give them something.
You know, a lot of people don't really pay attention to the offensive line stuff, so they have no idea who Andrew Whitworth and Zeitler are. These two offensive linemen were excellent. We have no idea what Cincinnati's offensive line is going to look like this year. And so, look, I think Joe Mixon is good enough. He can return first-round value. There is no way I'm drafting him in the second round. I probably won't draft him in the third round. Technically, I've got him as a top three round player. He's in my top 36, but, you know, there's players ahead of him. Like, I've got Larry Fitzgerald ahead of him. I'm not drafting Larry Fitzgerald in the third round either, because he's probably going to drop to the fourth. I've got Sammy Watkins ahead of him. I'll almost definitely get him in the third round, so that means I won't take Joe Mixon until the fourth. With that being said, I think the fourth is a great value for Joe Mixon. I actually think we're going to see his ADP tumble after this to the fourth or fifth round, and I couldn't be more psyched, Tags.
Well, what I said in my little blurb that I did is that if we see him playing extensively in the preseason, that's a problem. That is a problem. And I understand that he's a rookie and he's got to do this and that. But if you really are relying on someone, and if you know that you have a talent here that you're trying to protect, you don't put them out there for unnecessary snaps. So if Joe Mixon's out there for a long time in the preseason, especially the opener that they have, that's an issue for me. But a stat that I came across, Bobby, I did a lot of research this weekend in terms of running backs and the fronts that they faced throughout this last season, right? Jeremy Hill, with seven or fewer men in the box, which is a base defense, or, you know, if they're dropping back linebackers and coverage. So this is like literally the lightest fronts that you can get, seven or below. Jeremy Hill averaged just 3.4 yards per carry. It was the lowest among prevalent running backs. And he faced those seven or less 78% of the time. That's like crazy numbers. The average was 70%. So when you see his numbers, you know, higher than average, this is what people hang their hat on. The Bengals offensive line is going to be a problem. We've talked about that a little bit here. But on top of that, They have A.J. Green. They have Tyler Eifert. They have John Ross on the outside now, where these are field stretchers, right? These are guys that can go down the seam of the field. They can run intermediate routes. They can do whatever you want. So therefore, that's probably why you're seeing a lighter front for the running back. So it's really shocking to see Jeremy Hill struggle so much on a sample size of 173 carries to average just 3.4 yards per carry against a base defense or less. So I definitely agree with you in terms of talent. I just worry that this is going to be more of a timeshare than people think. And Bobby, what is this different than like someone like Amir Abdullah?
The difference with Amir Abdullah is Theo Riddick is actually one of the best receiving backs in the game. Maybe the best. I think I might take him over even Danny Woodhead and Duke Johnson. He just didn't have as many opportunities last season as Duke Johnson did. But Theo Riddick is extremely good. Amir Abdullah, we've only seen him do it a little bit. Joe Mixon, Amir Abdullah is a freak athlete, but Joe Mixon is a superstar waiting to happen. We can't say the same thing about Amir Abdullah as far as I'm concerned.
What about you, Justin? What do you think about this? Because I think Theo Riddick can be considered like a slot receiver, and whereas Detroit doesn't have A.J. Green, they don't have John Ross. And Gio Bernard is not shabby in his own right as a receiver out of the backfield. So, and like I said, I love Mixon's talent, but I'm just talking about from a production standpoint of what we can expect in terms of timeshares. Abdullah might be in line to get more touches.
I think they're very similar situations. I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think the offensive lines are both going to be a problem. The Lions lost Taylor Decker. That's going to hurt them. And I think looking at, even the quarterbacks there, Stafford and Dalton are kind of similar players. People might not think so. People see Stafford putting up big numbers, but Stafford, they've kind of pulled back on what he's been doing. And those offenses are very similar. They have some exciting weapons on the outside. They have great pass catching backs, but the Lions are starting to work Zach Zenner in there. He might get some goal line work. And that's what people are kind of expecting for that Jeremy Hill role. I don't particularly love Abdullah. I have him a lot further down. I don't think his talent is anywhere near Mixon's. I don't think he has that upside. It's the assumption of rational coaching, like Sigmund Bloom always talks about, right? You really want to believe that the Bengals coaching staff is going to realize that Mixon is the best player on that team and that he's going to be able to take advantage of that situation. Because like you're talking about, Hill's just not that level of talent. So we hope that that happens. I don't see Abdullah. I'm starting to give up on Abdullah. At the beginning of the offseason, I really looked into him hard. I really wanted to buy in. I really liked him last year. I thought he was a breakout candidate. But looking at it this year, I don't think they're ever going to give him the workload that he needs in order to be an extremely relevant fantasy threat. Whereas I think Mixon is going to get it. It's just a matter of how long is it going to take? Is it going to happen in the preseason? You talked about Mixon, if he gets extensive run in the preseason, that could be a problem. It could also be a good thing if he gets to showcase that talent and right. The buzz kind of keeps happening. And, we've seen that happen before where in August, a guy really builds that hype. And all of a sudden, when the season comes around, they're going to hand the keys to him. So I think Mixon's definitely going to end up taking over that role, whether it happens in the preseason, week one, or halfway through the year. We're going to see that happen. And with Amir Abdullah, I don't think we're ever going to see it happen now. I have Abdullah 29th, I believe now. I think he is going to lead that backfield, but his days of having that RB2, or even RB1 upside, I think at one point, we thought maybe that was going to be a possibility. I don't think that's going to happen for Abdullah.
Apparently, the Jaguars are considering the possibility of Leonard Fournette splitting carries to open the season with two failed running backs. Does this make any sense? Is this actually something you could see happening, Justin?
No, I mean, the Jaguars used the fourth overall pick to get Fournette, right? Like, they're planning on building a monster ground game around him. I don't mind the move. I don't think, I feel like it's a copycat league and they're trying to go with the Cowboys success that they had last year.
Might want to build up an all-pro offensive lineman first.
Exactly. Yeah, or at least figure out if Brandon Albert's going to play for you or retire.
He apparently wants to come back now. He wants to come back after he realized how much money he would have to give up.
Exactly, yeah. When there's a few million on the line, it's like, I might as well come back until you guys release me, right? So, are they going to really sit Fournette in favor of Ivory and Yeldon? I actually like Ivory. I was on Ivory last year. I thought that, for the value that he was going at, I thought he was going to produce some good fantasy numbers. I've even taken him in a couple NFL 10s this year as a late round pick who I think could be valuable if there's a Fournette injury. I don't think he's going to be valuable if Fournette is healthy. But Fournette being injured is something that did happen, more often than you'd like in college. Yeldon hasn't done anything to impress me. And, you'd have to think that, you know, he has a chance at least some passing down work. But for my late round picks, I want somebody who I think can emerge as that lead back who's going to get the touchdowns. And I don't think Yeldon has that in him. And Fournette definitely does. Fournette is going to get used, and he's going to get used often. And volume is king in fantasy football, especially for running backs, you know, and running backs that are drafted early in the first round. So I'm comfortable taking him in the third. I would even take him in the second, depending on how the draft goes. And there are things that scare me in Jacksonville. I don't want to, you know, just gloss that over. You know, Blake Bortles, their offensive line is unproven. The defense is obviously getting better. You know, so is the rest of the AFC South, though. But I think that defense could be the key to this whole thing. I think that defense we saw late last year, they got better. Significantly better, and they only got better this offseason as well by adding more pieces. So, you know, a good defense and a strong running game, that's exactly how Tom Coughlin envisions this team winning. And, you know, if they end up winning, we've thought this for a couple of years now that Jacksonville might, you know, take a turn and actually start improving, and it hasn't totally happened yet. But Coughlin made that Fournette call, and he's not going to let them roll with Ivory and Yeldon for extended periods. You know, those guys are simply going to be given Fournette breathers and, you know, beholden Gatorade for him on the sidelines and that sort of thing, in my opinion. So, I mean, Tags, you're pretty high on Fournette too, right?
Oh God, yeah. I'm Fournette's number one supporter. I've been, I love watching this kid in college. Like, he's one of those guys where I turn on his tape and I could watch it all day. Like, he's just so fun to watch. And I think people underestimate his vision. And that's one of the things that I've been kind of reading up on throughout the practice reports, looking at beat reporters and things like that. One of the veteran Jags defenders, I can't remember who it was at this point for whatever reason, but he started talking about Fournette, and he said that the thing that's most impressive, it's not the size, not the speed, those are great and all, but it's the vision and the fact that his eyes are always moving. He's always one step ahead of the defense. And he's like, and if you're getting double teamed, you're done. Like, you're just not going to catch him. And I think that was one of the underrated things coming out about Leonard Fournette, in the terms of if there's a slight hole, he's going to find it. And granted, this offensive line does have some issues, but I think Fournette's going to get plenty of work here. And you know, you talked about it, the defense. They came on over the second half of last season. They started to develop as a unit. And I've been saying all offseason that I believe they're a top five defense going forward. They added what was the top two free agents in my mind. You know, they added Calais Campbell, they added AJ Boye. Their cornerback duo of Boye and Ramsey is going to be legit. It's like shut down, like good luck wide receivers. And you know, they've talked about they want to run the ball every single play. We all know that that's not obviously, you know, realistic, but at the same time, it's telling you Leonard Fournette is going to be a workhorse. And the only time that I believe he's going to come off the field is if they're in clear situations where they're down a ton. TJ Yeldon's going to see more playing time because he's the clear third down back, whereas Chris Ivory, I don't see him as anything more than a, Fournette, you need a breather? Oh, come here. Come over here. We'll send Ivory in there for a couple snaps. Catch your breath, and we're going to put you right back in there. Ivory struggled on the goal line last year as well. It reports from practice are that TJ Yeldon and Ivory continue to get stuffed on the goal line, whereas Leonard Fournette will either run through it or he'll jump over it, and that it was a highlight of some of the practices. They say that he is the best player on the field there already. And so when I hear reports like this, I'm not really buying it. You don't draft someone like Leonard Fournette at number four overall if you're not going to use him like the running back he's made to be. Put him out there, let him do his thing. I'm drafting him as a top eight running back, and I'm doing so with confidence.
Yeah. Guys, we've got a few listener mailbag questions in a moment, but first I want to tell you all about a website that's going to make your fantasy football life a lot easier this season, TeamStake.com. If you're tired of hassling family and friends for league dues, TeamStake makes it super easy and convenient for you. They have a fully customizable pay-in and payout distribution system. The site is really easy to navigate, and best of all, it's completely free. Please check out TeamStake.com. I used them last year for all my leagues, and I couldn't be pleased, so I'm definitely going to be back. Again, that's TeamStake.com. Okay, guys, so over to the listener mailbag. We had three that I wanted to share. Actually, another one came in this morning, so it's actually four that I wanted to share on the show. And if you want to send in your questions, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com. We're getting so many questions, so I can't promise we're going to answer every single one, but we'll get to as many of them as we can. The first question is from a 10-team league, and the guy says, I'm struggling with whether to take Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, or Andrew Luck in the sixth round, which is where I usually start looking for a quarterback, or just waiting till the end of the draft and being okay with Tyrod, Stafford, or Andy Dalton. What do you think about this, Justin?
I want to scream wait, but I don't want to blow anybody's eardrums listening to the podcast. Like, unless, you know, the odd time I will go quarterback early. If I don't like, you know, who's available this year, the fourth round seems to be a little bit of a dead zone. You know, if I don't like who's there, I've actually taken Aaron Rodgers once this year. I almost never do that.
You got him in the fourth, man.
I got him in the fourth.
That's a steal.
I actually traded up to the first pick of the fourth round when he fell there, which is also something I would never normally do, trade up for a quarterback. So, you know, unless you're getting, if you're going to get, you know, Rodgers, Brady or Breeze in the fourth, fifth, sixth rounds, I'm all for that. And, you know, I would also have Luck in that category as well if, you know, he was healthy. But right now we're not totally sure about that. But after those guys, I don't see the need to grab a QB until way later. Over the last couple of years, you know, we've seen elite fantasy quarterbacks stand out from the pack, you know, and then there's a drop off that happens around, you know, the fourth or fifth quarterback. You know, last year, five quarterbacks averaged 20 points or more a game. And they were the four I mentioned and Matt Ryan. And I think Ryan is probably going to regress a little bit this season. New offensive coordinator, a little bit of a Super Bowl hangover. You know, and it's tough to maintain that kind of production as well. Like, just like Cam Newton found out, you know, after his MVP season. So Stafford and Dalton are actually, like I mentioned before, I think they're similar players, although people probably think, you know, Stafford is more of this gunslinger. You know, the Lions kind of scaled back the way they were using him and tried to kind of limit, you know, the mistakes and stuff and lean more on their running game or, you know, lack thereof. It didn't necessarily work out for them. But, you know, I don't love their offensive lines, but I do like their weapons. And they both have finished in the top 10 in the past. So I would be fine going with those guys. But the guy that I'd be aiming for here is Tyrod Taylor. Now, I have to give full disclosure. I'm a Bills fan. I grew up in Niagara Falls and, you know, I was around for all those, you know, Bills AFC championship years as a kid. So maybe you want to take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. But on a per game average, you know, Taylor has finished as the quarterback 7 and the quarterback 8 the last 2 years. And he's played in 29 of 32 games. Like, that's, I think a lot of people look at Taylor and think that, oh, he's an injury risk and he's hurt, but he hasn't really been. He's actually been really good the last couple of years. So the fact that his ADP is so low right now is stunning to me. You know, Watkins' health is an issue, but Taylor finishes the QB8 overall in 2016, and that was with Watkins in and out of the lineup and, you know, not even really playing at full strength when he was in there. Now we're adding Zay Jones, the rookie, and they just signed Anquan Boldin to the mix. You have a new offensive system. You know, I think it's going to
be so many things going his way. Yeah, Tags and I both love Taylor, too.
More passing attempts. And, you know, I think Tyrod's the best value out there at QB, and I'd be fine waiting on him. And if he does get taken before you, then, you know, you can fall back on a Stafford or a Dalton. Those are great backup plans. Or even somebody like Carson Palmer. You know, he has a lot of upside there that I think this year he could be good.
You know, I've got Stafford, Tyrod Taylor, and Andy Dalton. And Phillip Rivers, by the way, all in my top 12 quarterbacks. The only quarterback I would go and take is Aaron Rodgers. I'm actually taking him as early as the mid-third round in a standard league. Besides that, I don't want anything to do with Brady. Don't want anything to do with Breeze. Don't want anything to do with Luck. They're just going way too early for me.
Yeah, I'm kind of with the guys here in terms of I actually do consider Brady and Breeze in that top tier, and Andrew Luck would be my number three quarterback had I known he's healthy, but the longer this time goes on where he's not throwing, it's a little scary. I mean, I do think that he plays week one because the Colts haven't signed a veteran backup or anything like that they want to bring in to actually replace him for a certain amount of time, so I'm not fully, like, off Andrew Luck right now, but at the same time, you mentioned that the key word here was 10 team league. So when you're saying the sixth round of a 10-team league, you're talking about the top 60 players. For me, Aaron Rodgers has got to fall into at least the middle of the fourth round in a 10-team league. And then, you know, the other guys would have to fall into that sixth round territory. So for me, I'm definitely not taking a quarterback in those rounds. I'm more than okay going with Tyrod. You know, you mentioned it, Justin. So Tyrod has only averaged one fantasy point per game less when Sammy Watkins is out of the lineup. So we know what his ceiling is, and that's with limited pass attempts. I think he only threw the ball 430 times last year. So, you know, with Rex Ryan gone, they should throw a little bit more. He's obviously got a strong run game behind him. His offensive line is fantastic. I am not a Bills homer, but I am standing by Tyrod Taylor. I am the highest expert on him. I have him at number seven, my number seven quarterback. I love him. And if for some reason you're like, Mike, I just don't feel comfortable like relying solely on Tyrod, pair him with Andy Dalton and you'll be happy. I promise. Both those guys are going to be fantastic. So to answer your question, I am waiting in a 10-team league, especially.
Next question is from Ryan. He says, with all the receiving threats the Giants have this year, Odell, Brandon Marshall, Sterling Shepard, Ingram, is Eli a relevant fantasy football quarterback? What do you think, Justin?
I'm very hesitant to take Eli this year. Their offense should be better. You know, I didn't mention Eli in the last question, obviously, when I was talking about guys I'd be willing to take late in drafts. You know, Marshall's going to probably give them something a little bit more, you know, especially in the red zone. But Eli looked really bad last year, and part of it's that offensive line. You know, and I talked earlier about elite quarterbacks averaging over 20 points a game. Well, Eli averaged 14 points a game last year. So that's 7 to 10 points less per game than Rodgers, Brady, and Breeze. That's impossible to overcome in my mind. You know, if you're thinking about streaming or going quarterback by committee, then maybe, you know, Eli's a decent option to pair with somebody. But, you know, that's not a strategy I normally employ because I really value those bench spots, especially early in the year. I want to have high upside guys and that I can, you know, hopefully use to win the league. So I would avoid Eli in favor of those other late round quarterbacks that we mentioned earlier, like Tyrod and Stafford and Dalton. I like their upside, you know, way better.
I think Eli is going a tad underrated, though. So, I mean, no matter how bad we think he was in 2016, and he was bad, by the way, his 2013 season was even worse when he threw for 18 touchdowns, 27 interceptions. That led them to firing offensive coordinator, bringing in Ben McAdoo. And under McAdoo, in 2014 and 2015, 30 touchdowns, 35 touchdowns, 14 interceptions both years. His yards per attempt were going up. His completion percentage was going up. All was well. But as I've said, Eli Manning is someone you'd never, ever, ever, ever want to rely on him as your sole starting quarterback. In a two-quarterback league, Eli Manning is one of the best second quarterbacks to target because you'll live with the ups and downs because that's just going to happen in two quarterback formats. If you want to stream quarterbacks, Eli Manning is about as easy as they come to figure out. All you have to do is sit down and watch an Eli Manning game. When he's hot, you want to play him. Like, you can see what's happening. You could see him throw for three or four touchdowns, no interceptions, and you just see he's in a comfortable zone where he's doing it. That's why he's won a few Super Bowls. Now, on the flip side of that, you can watch a Monday night game when he's on primetime an awful lot. And when you see him throwing three, four interceptions, stay far away until you see him have two games in a row that are solid, because he will stay in a funk for a long time. And we saw it last year. So me, I'm betting on him to progress. But at the same time, it's impossible to trust him every single week. So two quarterback leagues, best ball leagues, that's where I'd target Eli Manning.
I wonder whether that defense factors in as well. The defense obviously got significantly better last year.
Mm-hmm. One of the best in football.
I actually like Paul Perkins, not to spoil, you know, we're going to talk later about upside guys, but I like Perkins. And I wonder whether if that defense is as strong again, and I expect it to be, whether they will need Eli to throw that much or whether they will maybe just be able to rely on the running game, which was, you know, almost non-existent last year. They only scored 6 rushing touchdowns.
You know, I moved Eli up to number 14 in my rankings after the draft because I thought with adding Ingram and everything that he has so many weapons, he can't be that bad. He's down at number 20 for me right now. And the reason why, I mean, I went back and I watched the tape. There were so many instances where he just threw terrible passes. He should have had 5 or 6 more interceptions that were dropped during that rough stretch. So probably like 10 overall for the season. I think Eli Manning's one of the worst quarterbacks in football right now. I think the Giants would rather have Blake Bortles than Eli Manning. And no. I would not be shocked whatsoever. I know this is a hot take, no hyperbole here. I would not be shocked if the Giants defense keeps them in it and they just hand the keys over to Davis Webb, because Eli Manning is going to lose them football games this year.
I mean, I'm not saying that he won't lose them some games because Eli, as I mentioned, has them cold streaks, but there's no way. And I'm not even Eli truther or anything like that, but there's no way I'd take Bortles over him.
Not a healthy Bortles?
I like Davis Webb, though, actually, down the road. I think Davis Webb's a little undervalued. And if Eli struggles, I mean, I don't think they go to Davis Webb this year. I don't think that happens. But for the future, I'm curious about it. And I can't wait to talk to Justin about Paul Perkins, because there's such a divide on him. There's such a divide on him.
We'll get there in just a second. Next question, and again from Julie in Illinois. Without considering the respective defensive matchups, how many quarterbacks would you actually bank on starting every single week?
It's not many.
By the way, it was, she said, thank you, my heroes, at the end of the email. So,
love you, Julie. I think Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, that's where it starts and ends. Drew Brees.
You wouldn't start Drew Brees every single week?
Well, no, because on the road against a good defense on the road, he's not going to be very good. Like, Drew Brees on the road, his home road splits are a little over exaggerated. He's still a really good quarterback on the road, but if he's playing a good defense on the road, I'm not excited to start Drew Brees. So, I mean, I guess you could probably...
He's still a top 8 quarterback for me, I think, any single week. Even if he goes to Arizona and he's going up against their pass defense, I've still got him top 8, man.
You know who's one quarterback who just continues to be like, literally, like, I don't get it. And I don't have him as a top 6 quarterback because his upside is limited. But how is Dak Prescott not considered to be one of the more consistent fantasy quarterbacks out there?
I mean, he is extremely consistent. It's just what the stats say. With that being said, I mean, it's his sophomore season. They have the hardest schedule strength for a passing game. So I don't know. I don't want to trust it this season. I'll just say that. I've got him number 15. I had him in my top 10 initially, but the more and more I look at that schedule, I just, it makes me a little nervous.
I want to say I have him at 10. Justin, what's your take on Dak Prescott? Why is he being undervalued and how do you feel about him?
I think Bobby nailed it, actually. I think their schedule is going to be tougher this year. And I think, you know, people are worried about a sophomore jinx or, you know, drop off. I think that is just attributed to defensive coordinators getting more time to look at him and more time to sort of attack that offense. And we've seen it before with other guys that have that strong rookie season. I also think that Dak lacks some of the like really elite skills. You know, I think he's a really good quarterback, but I think they limited him last year and he really exceeded expectations in the, you know, the sort of limited system that they gave him to work with. You know, I don't think that he's, you know, an Aaron Rodgers or a Drew Brees or anything like that. You know, I think he still has a long way to go and he could get there. But they're going to have to loosen up the reins on him. And, you know, it's going to be tougher for him in year two with coordinators scheming to stop him. Not to mention, we don't know what the situation is with Zeke right now. So, you know, if they're without Zeke for a quarter of the year, that's also going to impact them. And the offensive line, we keep talking about offensive lines. I feel like it's almost an offensive line show today. But, you know, that Cowboys offensive line has lost a couple guys and there's, you know, a little bit of doubt. They still have, you know, three amazing players up front. But that line isn't as rock solid maybe as it was last year. So there could be a little more pressure coming Prescott's way.
Yeah, for sure. I wish they would have added a wide receiver to play opposite Dez. I really wanted John Ross, but obviously the wide receivers went a lot earlier than I thought. I figured that Jerry Jones would have made a splash and signed John Ross if he'd fallen. But obviously that didn't happen. So I'm concerned about his weaponry. I am concerned about Zeke. I think whatever running back is out there, I think we're going to see them catch a lot more passes than we have in years past with the Cowboys, simply because Dez Bryant is seeing some very, 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 very good cornerbacks. And I don't care if you're listening and if you're like, oh, Mike, strength of schedule is so overrated every single year, this and that. I'm not talking about the actual strength of schedule. I'm talking about Dez Bryant's cornerback schedule. Look at it. Read up on it. You'll understand what I'm talking about. But Dak Prescott, going back to him, did you guys know, outside of the games against the Giants last year, there was just one game where he scored fewer than 17.5 fantasy points, which his percentage in terms of reaching that number was the second best in the NFL behind only Matt Ryan. He tied Aaron Rodgers in terms of those finishes. So that's what I'm saying. He was there and he only threw the ball, what was it, 459 times last year. This defense is going to be bad. Okay, I've said it before. I'll say it again. The Cowboys are not going to be a very good football team this year. I think they're going to struggle. But at the same time, Dak Prescott is going to have more pass attempts. We know that his rushing ability is there. So again, I don't think the ceiling is there. I don't think you could say, yep, Dak Prescott, he's got a chance to finish as a top three quarterback, because I don't think that. But I do think he's one of the more consistent quarterbacks out there.
And by the way, I want to ask the second part of this question, because it kind of goes with it. You know, what do you do with backup quarterbacks? Like, if you're not going to start your number four quarterback every week, like Drew Brees, is it important to target backups that schedules pair well with your starting quarterback?
The only way that I'm going after a backup, like I mentioned earlier, is if I'm taking one of those, you know, really late round guys, then I need somebody to pair with them. Other than that, you know, even if I'm getting those, you know, Tyrod type guys, I'm just going to roll with them. And, you know, depending on your league, there's normally going to be somebody on the waiver wire. If it's a two quarterback league or obviously a deeper league, then sometimes you run into a situation where you need to grab a second quarterback. Or, you know, if you're in a super flex or a league or dynasty, the Fantasy Pros Dynasty League that we had, then obviously you're going to have to load up on quarterbacks. But normally, I just want one quarterback, and I want to open up all those bench spots to players at other positions who could have breakout years, because you're going to be able to find it. Worst case scenario, you're going to be able to trade somebody because someone is going to have that second quarterback and just be salivating, waiting for someone to come and give them an offer. And normally, there's not that many people looking to get a quarterback, so even in a trade, you normally don't have to spend that much to pull a guy off another team.
For sure. I agree 100%.
By the way, in that Dynasty League, my team is falling apart. Every single person who's got hurt is someone that I drafted. So I'm going to start selling already and building for next year, man.
Oh, Bobby. Zay Jones. Oh, he took a hit for you, man.
Yeah, Zay Jones, Andrew Luck, Kenneth Dixon. It goes on. It's really just ugly. I'm going to cry, I think.
We could talk trade after the podcast then, Bobby.
Yeah, we probably should. Let's do that. Okay, we had one more question, and Tags already responded to him. I did too. I just wanted to let Dan know that we were going to get this on the show. One of our listeners, Dan, sent an interesting email this morning titled, Justin Tucker or Julio Jones? I panicked for a minute, then opened it. He was just trying to get my attention, and it worked. But he shared a bunch of kicker stats to explain why Justin Tucker is the best long kicker in the game. He was extremely consistent, was 36 points above replacement last season. So we wanted to know if it was possible everyone's undervaluing kickers. I don't think so at all. I would not dare draft a kicker in the last round, let alone, I'm not drafting any kickers at all. I'll pick one up right before the game start. But Tags, I want you to go ahead and explain why kickers just aren't valuable.
No, kickers are, they're not valuable. I mean, if you go to DFS and you talk FanDuel, yeah, there are certain guys that have somewhat perfected when you should be taking kickers and like where they're playing, you know, if it's indoors, what team they're playing, the over under, whether they're a favorite. There are so many things that go into it for DFS, but when you're talking about in a season long format, all these guys do, it's a high variation thing, right? You can line up someone like Dan Bailey, you know, as the fifth kicker off the board, and you're going to be perfectly fine. He's indoors pretty much all year. He plays on a solid offense. But I don't even think we should spend too much time on it. My response to Dan was said, Dan, we love you and care about you, but this deserves a detention. Like, it's time to sit in the corner. And
but like a lot of our listeners might be wondering the same thing, and they don't understand why. Like, it's just not predictable.
They're all within like 2 points per game.
Yeah. Every single year, you take the 12 kickers at the beginning of the year that you expect to be the best, and two of them are actually finishing in the top 12, and they're finishing like number six and number 10. It's not consistent for year to year. You can't plan on it. And even week to week, there's just so much variance.
Yeah, it's similar with defenses too.
And a big part of kickers for me is just picking a guy in a high scoring offense, and you're going to hopefully get the most opportunities that way and then roll from there. And definitely, like, I'm even in a couple leagues where there's limited roster moves, and I do not want to be wasting those on picking up a kicker every week. So I'm happy to take one of those guys, you know, not one of the top guys, but just a guy in the late round, the last round of the draft, or even like you mentioned, Bobby, just not even in the draft, use that spot on a running back, see what happens in camp, and then drop somebody right before the season and grab yourself a kicker and just get a guy in, you know, one of those teams that you think is going to have an okay offense, you know, that's probably rated, you know, between 8 and 12 of the kickers, and just roll with him as long as you can.
I just always stream whoever's going up against the Patriots because they play great red zone defense and it seems to work pretty well. Okay, so we're going to dive into some high upside running backs, but first I want to tell you about yourrules.com. Before you just use the same commissioner service as always, there's a hot new site offering some incredible new customizable features. Instead of set it and forget it with yourrules.com, you've got the ability to manage the outcome of your weekly matchups. They're the first site out there to offer a fantasy experience that's much closer to how a real football game is managed. I'll definitely be using their site this year to take advantage of some of these features. To learn more about in-game substitutions, points for penalty yardage, and the unique ability to handle injuries, head over to yourrules.com and register for the 2017 NFL season. Your Rules is fantasy sports your way. That's yourrules.com. Okay, guys, high upside running backs. We're going to kind of do this in a roundtable format, and we're going to let Justin start us off. Justin, who's a high upside running back that you want to talk about today?
So for this, I was looking at guys that are going outside of the top 30 running backs. I'm not sure if everybody went that way, but I wanted guys that are going in the, you know, the mid to later rounds that are going to have a chance to really blow up. So I'm going to take the most obvious one right away, and that's Derrick Henry. He's going in the seventh round. His ADP is RB33, and the guy's just a beast, right? Like, if DeMarco Murray goes down, we're talking about a top five fantasy running back immediately, without question. And unfortunately, I still like Murray this year, and I've actually taken Murray in a couple places. But I think the Titans are going to continue to run the ball a ton, even though, you know, they've invested in that receiving core a little bit. I still think they're going to run that off the running game first. And that could result in Murray and Henry being the, you know, Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman of 2017 as teammates who could both be in the top 20 or top 25 at the end of the year. So, you know, I think a big part of, you know, the love of Henry as well and the love of Murray is that Titans offensive line, which is just killer. You know, let's hope they didn't, you know, chug too many beers during the Predators playoff games there, and hopefully that doesn't cause them to fall off at all. But that line's great. And, you know, I understand anybody that wants to bet against Murray. He's coming off almost 350 touches, and he's already dealing with, you know, injury. I believe it's a hamstring injury in camp.
Fading at the end of the season, yeah.
So I understand that, but, you know, I'm not sure sure that you know, anyone in football right now, when we're talking about mid to late round picks, has higher upside than Henry. We're talking about a guy that if Murray goes down, depending on what happens in the season, Henry from that point on could be the number one fantasy player. He could even compete in my mind with Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. He's not the receiver those guys are, but his stats, his touchdowns, he could just explode. So he's somebody that I love getting as long as I can get him in that seventh round. Now, there's times where he's definitely going in the fifth. I've seen it. So at that point,
that's
I'm
too
not,
high for me.
Yeah, I'm not investing in him there, but if I can get him in those mid rounds, I'm all over Henry.
If Murray was to go down in the preseason for the whole year, and you don't want to predict that or really even talk about it, but just to give you an idea of Henry's ceiling, I would take Johnson, Bell, Elliott, and probably McCoy over Henry. But I don't even think I'd take Devontae Freeman over him at this point. What about you, Tags?
Yeah, Derrick Henry. Bobby and I both have man crushes on Derrick Henry. A guy that when you watch him on tape, he's a guy that moves faster than a guy his size is supposed to move. Like, that's just the best way for me to describe it. And, you know, I talked earlier about the research I spent time doing this weekend. So when I talk about seven or eight man fronts, the best way to describe it, you hear 4-3, you hear 3-4 defenses, right? That's where the defensive front is. So when they bring another man into the box, it's eight or more. That means there is a stacked box against them. Derrick Henry led the NFL in stacked boxes. On 52% of his carries, there was eight or more in the box. So to see him averaged 4.21 yards per carry against a loaded box 52% of the time, you are ridiculous, good sir. And DeMarco Murray, he's someone that also did pretty well. I mean, he averaged 3.95 yards per carry. He saw a stacked box on 44.7% of his carries. So it was very close between the two, but Derrick Henry was even better. As you guys mentioned, you know, the receiving ability, that's going to hinder him a little bit. That was the knock coming out. But they've said it's possible that he doubles his carries this year. I wrote a piece earlier this offseason talking about age and what it means to running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. In running backs, the age of 29 is when they essentially lose their elite upside. And DeMarco Murray is 29 years old. He also has tons and tons of touches on his body. He's already dinged up this preseason. We saw him fade down the stretch, average under 4 yards per carry over the final 6 weeks. We saw Derrick Henry get more involved. This is a team that added a bunch of wide receiving options in order to limit that defensive front that they were facing. To see them have as much success as they did facing the defense as they did, it was somewhat ridiculous. So I am 100% in on this one. He would be atop my list, and I have no issue with someone taking him, you know, in, like you said, that sixth round range, because I think that, you know, the risk is worth the reward. And Justin, I said it before it was popular. I want to know if you're with me on this one. And now that we hear Devonta Freeman got signed to a 5-year extension, I was taking Derrick Henry over Tevin Coleman.
Me too.
And people were calling me nuts, saying that you're a little bold there, Mike. And I didn't think it was talking about their similar situations, but I think that Derrick Henry's is better.
I still have Coleman ahead, but I think if both starters go down, I think Henry is the more valuable player. So I still have Coleman ranked ahead. I think he's still going to be used more. I think he's going to also have some touchdown regression, some negative touchdown regression this year.
Big time.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen for him. But I was taking him. If we're looking at who's going to have more fantasy points, assuming everyone stays healthy this year, I think Coleman has the edge still. It's close, but I think Coleman has the edge. But like I said, if a starter goes down in each case, then Henry's the guy that I want for sure.
Yeah. All right, Tags, who's your first guy?
All right, so I'm gonna go a little off the grid here. Can we talk about Duke Johnson for a moment? I know there's a lot of...
Yes, that's who I was going to talk about. Man, you guys stole my first two guys.
Well, I mean, Duke Johnson, for whatever reason, you know, this time last year, Duke Johnson was being selected as a top 20 running back in PPR leagues. He was top 26, I want to say, in standard leagues. And, you know, for good reason. You know, people talked about the Cleveland offensive line and the fact that it was solid last year. But this year, they've added so much to it that I actually ranked them as my number two offensive line heading into the season. Obviously, Isaiah Crowell is the starting running back there. We've learned that. Hugh Jackson's talked about it. We get it, right? But let's talk about the fact that, you know, we mentioned if DeMarco Murray were to go down. What happens if Isaiah Crowell goes down? This is a team.
He's Devontae Freeman with a bunch of negative game scripts. I mean, this is a running back one if Crowell goes down.
That's where I'm at with it. In PPR leagues. In standard, I may want to see him with a little bit more carries, but he has done a solid job on the carries that he's received. People don't view him. People are like, well, if Crowell goes down, I don't see him as really their workhorse running back. I tend to disagree. I think that the kid can run the ball. I want to say that he's the all-time leading rusher from Miami. So, I mean, that's not a small feat to accomplish at a big school like that. So, for me, Duke Johnson being taken outside the top 40, 45 running backs where he is, this is a guy who the game scripts fit what he does best. They've talked about it all offseason that they're using him in the slot, and that this is important, and this is really big news because we've heard nothing but negative things about Corey Coleman, right? We know Kenny Britt. We know what he is. He's a perimeter wide receiver. He's not going to be the guy that's over the middle of the field catching the short passes. If they need someone like Duke Johnson to replace Andrew Hawkins and, you know, the production that they expected out of Corey Coleman, I think Duke Johnson has solid, like RB2 PPR worthiness right now. I think you can make the argument with his pass catching ability that you could talk about him as a top 24 PPR running back. I'm not drafting him as such, but I'm saying that that's where we're at with him. I think he's one of the safer picks when you're drafting around that range where guys like Samaje Perine, you know, Theo Riddick, James White, those are the guys going in his range. So I'd rather take Duke Johnson than those guys.
Yeah, he's the safest and he has the highest upside in that range.
Justin, what's your take on Duke Johnson in the Browns backfield?
I think Duke's a great call. I'm big on Crowell this year. I really like how much near the second half of the season last year they were using Crowell in the passing game quite a bit. And I thought that was going to be a huge problem for Duke. And all this talk now that, you know, they're going to put Duke in the slot, and really makes me believe, I'm changing my mind on it. It really makes me believe that they're going to keep him involved. He's not someone that I'd really want to invest in just looking at, like you're saying, right now. Maybe he's got, you know, RB2 upside in PPR. He's not somebody who I think is going to do that necessarily. I need to see it a little bit first. I need to, you know, just all this talk that they're going to put him in the slot. We've heard that about other guys on other teams before, the Gio Bernard types and stuff. And, you know, until I actually see them using him like that, and maybe they will in the preseason, I don't necessarily want to invest in him like that. But as Crowell's backup, as a guy who I can get, who if Crowell goes down, he's going to be behind that great offensive line now, absolutely somebody I want to invest in.
Yeah, I think there's a chance he could lead Cleveland in receiving yards this year. And I know that's not really the type of thing you say about a running back, but I mean, think about what Reggie Bush did his rookie year. I know they're different types of players, but Duke Johnson, they came out and said he's the best receiver on the team right now. Maybe they just start throwing the ball out of the slot and realize, man, we got to get the guy the ball a lot more. I'm looking at the experts that are the highest on Duke Johnson right now. This is good company for us to be in here, Tags. We've got Scott Whitfield, Pat Fitzmaurice, both in the top 20. You've got Jake Seeley, Dan Claskins, Sean Corner, Brett Talley, both in the top 5 last year. A lot of accurate experts love Duke Johnson this year.
He was obviously my guy, so it's easy for me to say, yeah, that's correct.
Somewhere Kenny Britt's crying right now about the fact that Duke Johnson might be the best receiver on that team.
So, guys, I actually didn't have the same idea as you. I put two guys that were inside the top 24 drafted, C.J. Anderson and Mike Gilsley. I just want to cover them really quick, okay? C.J. Anderson could be a top 5 running back, right? And Mike Gilsley, how high is his ceiling? We're talking like 1,200 yards, 15 touchdowns. Again, that's a top 10 running back. So these guys are going in the mid rounds. I think they have huge upsides.
Agree. C.J. Anderson, love him. They've done good things with the offensive line. Rumors came out that they're trying to trade for a quarterback. Now, I don't know if I believe those, but the quarterback situation is limiting. The fact that he's on not a great offense, I think that limits C.J. Anderson's upside, but I think he's being undervalued.
He was drafted in the top 6 2 years ago, remember?
Right, but that was also an offense that was led by Peyton Manning. So that's why I'm saying I don't know if C.J. Anderson has the upside of a top 6 running back or anything like that, but what I'm saying, I would draft him as a top 15 running back. I think there's a real conversation to be had when talking about guys like C.J. Anderson with Lamar Miller and Isaiah Crowell. I think that they're all in that similar tier, and I think you can make a case for any of them. The best thing is that C.J. Anderson is going a round or two after those guys, which is why I like C.J. Anderson. As for Mike Gillisley, 100%, I'm with you. I think that his talent has been underrated. I think he's a better pass catcher than people are led on to believe. I don't think he needed to do that in Buffalo. He's obviously better than Blunt in that category. All the efficiency numbers, all of the numbers when you break down the defensive fronts and what they were looking at, Mike Gillisley is better than LeGarrette Blount. That's basically what it comes down to. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of fluff coming out of New England. Can you trust him every single week? But we're talking about high risk, high reward upside. You know, like in Mike Gillisley legitimately has top 6 upside.
As a Bills fan, I saw a lot of Gillisley, and yes, he is the real deal. He is going to be excellent for New England. I wasn't happy when they made that move and stole him from us, obviously, as the Patriots always do, but Yeah, Gillislee is, I think he's going to lead that backfield. I definitely think he's a great guy to target. I don't so much agree on CJ Anderson. In the offseason, the coaching staff talked a lot about wanting to use a committee approach. And now, you know, Devontae Booker obviously got hurt and he's expected to be back for the season. But, you know, I don't really even like Jamaal Charles either. I don't think he's really going to be that much of a problem for Anderson. I didn't like what I saw from Anderson. Coming back from that injury, he looked really overweight in the offseason. There was a picture going around of him with Marshawn Lynch and Joe Mixon, and Anderson looked like double the size of those two. And Marshawn's not a small guy. So I still think that the offensive line is getting better, but you know, it's not an offensive line that I really want to bet on yet. And I don't like that quarterback situation. I'm still a little bit worried about that offense. I think Mike McCoy's arrival could help, but I think it's actually might help the passing game more than it's going to help the running game. So CJ Anderson is somebody who I really have stayed away from. And oddly enough, we're re-releasing our bust today, our updated bust list. And CJ Anderson is the picture at the top of it. So when you guys started talking about that, I was like, oh no, these guys are going to hate me for that.
No, I mean, I think he does have bust potential. I just think he also has a nice ceiling. I'm wondering, what quarterback would Denver trade for at this point?
They were talking about A.J. McCarron. That was leaked out, that A.J. McCarron was a target for them. I mean, I would say McCarron's probably better than what they have, but that's not saying much. So I don't think that would be a quarterback that I would attempt to trade for. I think Garoppolo would have made more sense for them. But at this point, it seems like New England is hanging on to Jimmy Garoppolo.
Such a strange situation, too, because in the offseason, it seemed like a lot of people were kind of resigned to the fact that Paxton Lynch is just going to end up getting the start, and there was a lot of rumors coming out about that. And then last week, I saw John Elway talk on NFL Network, and you could clearly tell that he did not believe in Paxton Lynch by the way he was. He didn't say it, but you could infer from the way he was talking up Simeon, saying how much experience he got last year, and really suggesting that Simeon, to me, it's after that interview, it really seemed to me that Simeon's going to be the starter, but that I don't think the team's particularly excited about it. So I think they should be looking at someone else, and dare we say Colin Kaepernick? I don't think it's going to happen, but man, it would be awesome if it did.
Yeah, that would be an interesting fit. So Justin, who is your number two upside running back you want to talk about?
Oh, do we finally get to talk about Paul Perkins?
Yes.
So Paul Perkins, based on the ADP on Fantasy Pros, the consensus ADP you guys have, he's going in the seventh round as the RB32. You know, last year he was hidden away behind Rashad Jennings, and it was very strange to me. You know, maybe, you know, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You know, maybe he wasn't showing enough to the coaching staff to get more snaps, but it wasn't until the end of the year that the light bulb finally turned on for the coaching staff and they decided to give him more touches. And once he got the bulk of the carries over the final three games, he averaged 4.8 yards per carry, and he posted the team's only 100-yard game of the season, and he looked good doing it. He, you know, could have been fresh legs at the end of the year. That's definitely possible, but I thought he looked really good on tape there. So now he's the starter, and they went out of their way to give him that title in the offseason. The coaches talked about it. And they didn't bring in much competition. Depending what you think of rookie, you know, Wayne Gallman, I'm not expecting much from him this year. Shane
Love
Green
Gallman.
Definitely is going to factor in. Well, Bobby, you can talk about Gallman in a bit here, but you know, Shane Green's definitely going to factor in the passing game. But this is Perkins' backfield right now. And, you know, the Giants defense, we talked about before, one of the better units in the league, and they're going to help them keep games close. And that means favorable game scripts for whoever the running back is. And in this case, I think it's going to be Perkins. And Perkins has good field vision. He's a smooth runner when you watch him. He's not afraid of contact, too. That's a good combination. That's stuff I like. And, you know, hopefully the offensive line does get a little better. They brought in DJ Fluker. We're not exactly sure if he's going to start or not yet. You know, but the passing game is going to improve probably, you know, with Marshall. And that means, you know, some softer fronts for Perkins probably. And, you know, I like the addition of Rhett Ellison. It's not really something that's talked about a lot, but he's a blocking tight end who could help things there in the running game. So, you know, we're talking with Perkins about a guy that you're getting in, you know, the sixth or seventh round. And that's not much of an investment for somebody who I think has pretty an obvious path to RB2 numbers if things fall his way.
For sure. I'm with you 100% on Perkins. And the fact that people are dismissing this because they're like, well, the Giants offense was really bad last year, Mike, that's because Eli Manning was bad. And if I'm expecting Eli Manning to get somewhat back on track with the addition of Brandon Marshall, with the addition of Evan Engram, with Paul Perkins being inserted into the offense, yeah, of course, because if you go back to 2015, they're a top 10 scoring offense, right? And, you know, I released an article last week talking about, you know, how much does team scoring matter? And it very much so matters. You talked about Paul Perkins potentially seeing lighter fronts with Brandon Marshall there. This is a fun one for me, right? Because when I was going through all these numbers this weekend, and I know I keep referencing it, but it's fascinating to me. I got to Perkins and I thought it was a big warning sign. did you know that he faced seven men or less in the box on 93.8% of his carries? That's ridiculous, okay? That is just like mind-blowing. Like, he doesn't see stacked boxes. And it has to do with the way that Ben McAdoo calls his offense. I realized, because Rashad Jennings, that's the next player I charted after that. And I was like, okay, what is it? Rashad Jennings, 92.3% of his carries, seven or less. So the Giants don't face stacked boxes. It's just the way that McAdoo lines up his team. He runs three wide. He may go four wide this year, put Sterling Shepard out there with Evan Engram as a tight end. I don't know what he's going to do, but Paul Perkins is going to continue to see light fronts, and he's on a high-scoring offense. They've, as Justin said, they've went out of their way to say, he is our starting running back. There's no competition here. It's Perkins' job. It is what it is. Shane Vereen has always been hurt. He's always been overvalued. Wayne Gallman, as much as I do think Gallman's a solid three-down running back, I don't think that he's going to make an impact in year one. So I am with you on Paul Perkins, and he's free as a starting running back as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I just watched Wayne Gallman run, guys, and he's so patient. He's got great footwork, really good instincts. I know he's not the best athlete in the world, but I just think this is a quality NFL running back. Like, I look back at Marion Barber highlights, and he reminds me he can be that type of running back in the NFL. So I just don't think Paul Perkins is that talented. I'm not saying he's not going to start from week one, but I think he'll be on the hot seat, and I think that Wayne Gallman is going to earn himself some more carries and cut into his work. So that's why I'm a little nervous about Perkins. But, you know, I agree, the upside definitely is there with him. Tex, who's your next guy?
Yeah, that risk is kind of built in with him, right? So that's why Perkins for me is an easy pick. You know, is like, he's going as like the 32nd running back off the board, which is just madness. But the player I wanted to talk about, and a player that it took me some time because last year I wasn't on, CJ Procise. If CJ Procise was drafted by the Seattle Seahawks in this draft in the third round, people would be going out of their way to draft him, right? And on time, but the crazy part to me is that people are forgetting what he did when he was on the field last year. Sure, it was a very limited role. It's a very, very small sample size. But this team mold fits his skill set to a T. You know, it reminds me a lot of David Johnson when he came out.
Whoa.
David Johnson was considered a receiving running back and a guy that could not catch the ball, or that a guy that can catch the ball to the backfield, but he's not going to do for you in terms of much for carrying the ball. CJ Procise was a former wide receiver at Notre Dame, converted to a running back. So this is a guy that arguably the best thing he does is catch passes. And when you're running for your life the way that Russell Wilson has been for the last couple years, this is a safety valve, right? And we saw him overtake Christian Michael in short order. They cut Christian Michael after that. And of course, you know, CJ Procise goes down for the year. But we're talking about Eddie Lacy, a guy doesn't have the most speed to get onto the out to the edge. He's going to need a little bit of blocking in front of him. Thomas Rawls is a guy who really struggled last year. And I know that a lot of people are saying good things about him this offseason, but in reality, he hasn't been the same player since his ankle injury, and it's hard to say that Seattle believes in him with the signing of Eddie Lacy. But CJ Procise, he's a guy that it literally doesn't even depend on Lacy or Rawls what they do. I think that they can line him out wide. They could put him in the back. They can actually have him on there as a two running back set, line him up in the slot, and have him catch passes. CJ Procise is a target of mine, and I think he comes with league-winning upside. I know, Bobby, you're not so high on Procise because you don't think that he could handle all three downs, but Justin, where are you at with Procise? Because my take is that the Seattle Seahawks need him.
I might have even reached for Procise a little bit in our dynasty draft a couple months ago. I really, really like him, especially in PPR formats, obviously. And in that draft, I believe I also got Thomas Rawls as well. So I'm essentially betting completely against Eddie Lacy. Yeah, I don't think Lacy's going to be able to hold that job for long. And I know a lot of people are really high on him, and he's making his weight cuts and everything's great right now. But I just don't see Lacy establishing himself there. People think he's going to be the next Marshawn Lynch. People love those narratives, but you know, he's not in Green Bay anymore. You know, and I want to see Lacy show us something outside of that Aaron Rodgers offense first. And with Procise, we're talking about, you know, we know what the new prototype for a back is, and it's a guy who has the kind of receiving and running skills that Procise has, right? We're looking at those guys like the David Johnson and the Le'Veon Bells. Procise has that kind of talent. He might not be exactly on their level, but he's not far off. So he's a really, really exciting player. He's going to need an injury probably, or at least Lacy to, you know, completely falter in order to get his chance, I think. At least we're talking about the beginning of the year. But as the year goes on here, ProSize is definitely the most explosive back on that team. He's got a freakish burst too. Just a super exciting player. And that's the kind of guy you want on your bench, a kind of guy who could absolutely explode.
Here's the thing about ProSize, guys, is that offensive line is so bad. If you put David Johnson on Seattle, he's not a first round player. I really don't think so. I know David Johnson is the best player in the NFL. You could say Le'Veon Bell, but I think it's David Johnson is the best player in the NFL. David Johnson behind that offensive line, I wouldn't be that excited because it's just that bad. And then you consider that CJ ProSize is the number three option in that backfield. A lot has to go right for him to get enough carries for him to have that elite upside. Sure, if you go ahead and you put him on the Giants, I would say CJ ProSize, I'd put him in my top 30. I'd say he has almost Derrick Henry type of upside, but he's not on the Giants. He's behind that horrible offensive line. And he's number third on their depth chart, so I'm not interested. I've got him lower than his ADP.
And going back to the depth chart thing that we talked about a bunch today, you know, I don't think ProSize is third. I think really he's second because I think he's going to be their passing down back. And I think that's going to give him an opportunity to really showcase what he has. And they're going to use him. And to talk about how the offensive line is bad, what better way to counter that than to get ProSize into space and throw screen yes. passes to him and let's get him going out there. So I think we're going to see a lot of that early in the year, and it could eventually lead to him taking more of the early down carries as well.
Yes, and let's not forget, so since Russell Wilson took over this offense in 2012, basically when Pete Carroll got there, this offense was top nine in scoring in each of the years up until last year. And last year, we know what happened to Russell Wilson. We know the issues there, right? He was, and then after over the second half of the season, Russell Wilson was the number four fantasy quarterback. So Russell Wilson got back on track. So with me, I want a high scoring offense for my running backs. That's a check. I want a guy that doesn't have much competition in his role. CJ ProSize has zero competition for his role in terms of catching passes out of the backfield. And the offensive line, as Bobby, I'm with you 100%. Their offensive line is awful. Would I trust David Johnson to run behind it? I mean, I would take the ups and downs of the running the ball with his receiving, and that's where it comes down to, right? And that's why I think David Johnson or a guy like CJ ProSize can fit well on this team because of what they excel in. I don't think ProSize is a top-notch runner per se, but I think he's a top-notch receiver out of the backfield, and that's what this team needs. So CJ ProSize, that's one of my guys that I'm more than happy stashing, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I didn't invest too much to get him.
Yeah, at least he's not Zach Zenner from last year.
That's true. Don't draft Zach Zenner. I don't really care what anybody says. Just don't do it.
All right, guys, I've got two quick hitters that I'm going to talk about. LeGarrette Blount, I still think he has pretty high upside. He was the number seven running back last year. He moves to a better offensive line. I know they don't run the ball inside the red zone as much. I know they don't get in the red zone as much. But, I mean, he could be number 10 again, and he's going really late.
I'm not really on LeGarrette Blount this year. I think he has that touchdown upside, but I just don't think he has very much as a runner anymore.
Oh, I agree. And he's horrible. But I mean, the touchdown upside is enough to put him in the top 10.
How many yards do you really think he's going to get this year? Like, I think they're going to work in those other backs. I think they'd like to see more of Wendell Smallwood in that offense.
I like Smallwood,
You know, I think Sproles and Pumphrey might be, you know, I think Sproles is probably going to get more of the passing down work, but I think Pumphrey might even have a role in there as well. So I think there's going to be a lot of backs involved, and I just don't see LeGarrette Blount, you know, he might get, yeah, I could see him get eight touchdowns or maybe, you know, he gets up to 10, but I don't think the yardage is going to be there. So, you know, while he's someone that you might want to, you know, have just as a, you know, somebody who can drop into your lineup if you really, really need a backup or a bye week kind of thing. But I don't really want a guy like that on my team. I want somebody who I'm looking for that upside, like we talked about with the guys like ProSize. You know, I want guys who could really explode if they get it. I don't see LeGarrette Blount getting to, you know, 1,200 yards along with those, you know, that high touchdown upside.
He didn't get to 1,200 last year either. He had 299 carries for 1,161 yards. I know he had the 18 touchdowns. I mean, that's 3.9 yards per carry. If he's behind...
He had 72 red zone carries.
You're right. But I mean, if he's behind this Eagles offensive line, he can get back up to that 4.3 yards per carry we've seen his entire career. And if he gets a dozen touchdowns, which I think is entirely possible, he's one of the best goal line backs in football. That's a top 10 running back, guys.
And that line is great.
It is great. And it's possible that I completely took my LeGarrette Blount hate too far, but I don't think so. And looking back even at Ryan Matthews, who's a more well-rounded running back than LeGarrette Blount, all right? And so in this offense with Doug Peterson, if you guys recall, before Ryan Matthews was even injured last year, in the first 11 weeks of the season, there were just four games he had more than nine carries. Like, that's when he was healthy, and he can get things done in the receiving game, too, whereas LeGarrette Blount, we know he's hands of stone. So for me, I just think that there's going to be some serious inconsistency here. I don't think the Eagles' defense is anything to write home about. So the game scripts are not going to be like they were in New England.
I like their defense.
If you guys recall, the game splits in terms for LeGarrette Blount in terms of winning and losing, how many carries he gets, that's going to influence his outcome severely. And if Philly wants a boring option at running back, they got it. But if you're looking for higher upside, get Pumphrey out there, get Sproles, see what you have in Wendell Smallwood. Ryan Matthews still hasn't been cut, but it seems like that's bound to happen at some point. I mean, unless LeGarrette Blount, they realize that he's just not very good.
The reason Matthews didn't get that many touches is because he fumbled so many times. I mean, they went out and got Blount because he doesn't fumble, right? I mean, he's a guy that
they can twice. Trust. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a smart signing for the team for sure. I just not the kind of player that I'm targeting in fantasy.
That's fair.
Well, think about it this way, though, Bobby. Like, so LeGarrette Blount, how long did it take for him to get signed in free agency? And he didn't get a big deal. So it just goes to show his in the NFL how teams actually view him and that nobody really wanted to
sign
LeGarrette
Blount. View him, too. I'm just saying he's behind the offensive line. He's a great goal line back. He might get 250 to 300 carries again. And if he does, I think he's got RB1 upside for sure.
I think it's like 200 carry max. Okay. But again, it's very possible that I'm underestimating LeGarrette Blount. It's very possible. I just don't like the player.
The final guy I want to mention is Powell for the Jets. He was one of the most efficient. He's going to get a ton more touches. That's just a good recipe, right, fellas?
Yeah, for sure. You know, as much as we want to rag on the Jets for how bad that roster looks right now, how bad that offensive roster especially looks right now, Powell, it almost benefits Powell because he's the one weapon there who can actually do something, the one proven weapon. He had a great year last year. You know, I think Forte is slowly going to fade into the distance and maybe even get cut. It would not shock me if they cut him and just roll with Powell and Elijah McGuire. You know, Powell had a great year last year. And, you know, while the rest of the offense didn't get any better, that means that team's going to be pretty bad and they're going to be trailing and they're going to have to throw. And that's where Powell excels. So I think he's a great, great option.
Quick take on Powell tags.
Yeah, that's the thing. So Powell, I like him, but at the same time, I don't think Matt Forte goes away. I think they both play out of necessity. I think Matt Forte is being a little bit undervalued, but I think Powell is the guy who's going to see, I'll say, a 55-45 split. I don't think that Powell is going to be the workhorse that people are expecting, but his work in the passing game allows him to be game script proof. So I have no issues with Bilal Powell, and I would definitely 100% take him over someone like LeGarrette Blount.
I don't think Powell has running back one upside, but he definitely has RB2 upside. We saw it last year. He did it, right? In PPR, he was the RB16. In standard, he was the RB22. Like, it's there. So even if he gets a little bit more work, like, what, I don't know what's going to change from last year. And I still don't have him ranked that high because I think the offense in general is going to be even worse. But it's hard for me to look at it and say, okay, what is going to change? How is he not going to get the same amount of touches? You know, the efficiency probably will go down, but I still think that he's going to be in that mix for low-end RB2 numbers.
That's exactly where I have him. I am as the number 24 running back in my rankings right now, so I think you and I are locked up there.
You know, guys, I was going to end the show right here, but I just realized we didn't even talk about Kareem Hunt. He's been getting a lot more first-team reps, and he's the perfect high-upside running back. He's going number 42 among running backs right now for ADP, and he might start for Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm. I wrote an article on Spencer Ware, and even though I'm a Spencer Ware supporter, I made the argument that I would actually draft both Spencer Ware and Kareem Hunt because you're going to get RB1 value out of one of them, and you're only paying a fifth or a sixth round pick and a ninth or a tenth round pick. So it's like asking yourself, would you trade a first round pick? Would you trade your fifth and ninth round pick for a first round pick? Absolutely, you would. So for me, Spencer Ware and Kareem Hunt make for an interesting duo to get. I think Spencer Ware is the one that starts the job. Adam Schefter was on Jeff Ratcliffe's show on Sirius just last week, and he said that nope, this is Spencer Ware's job to start the season. Kareem Hunt may have an opportunity to do something over the second half. I think he's competing with Charcandrick West for his spot right now.
Okay, well, let's say Adam Schefter is wrong and they just name Kareem Hunt the starting running back. I mean, we've seen this kind of thing before. Alfred Morris went from undrafted to starting running back out of the blue. How high would you draft Kareem Hunt, Justin?
I mean, I would completely flip them at that point. If we knew for sure that Hunt was going to be the number one back, he's an RB2 with RB1 upside. Like, he definitely is going to go within the top 20 in my mind. Right now, I think part of the worry, you know, a lot of people are high on Ware at tags, like you mentioned. You wrote an article about him. I know Joe Holka's rushing expectation really spoke highly of Ware as well. And this is going to be one of the most exciting battles to watch in training camp and in the preseason. But I keep coming back to, is Andy Reid going to start a rookie running back? And for some reason, I'm really having trouble believing that they're just going to discard Ware and let Hunt take over the role. So I think it might end up being the worst case scenario where Hunt starts to get involved quite a bit, and now we end up with this backfield split. You know, with all that being said, you know, Ware's not really someone that I feel comfortable pulling the trigger on right now. You know, I find that's that fourth round range he's normally going in, and we talked about that before, that that's sort of a bit of a dead zone. There's a little bit too much risk for me to want to spend that on Ware. But if we're talking, like Tag said, about you're going to grab Hunt and just pair the two, not a bad approach at all.
All right, guys. Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. Justin, really appreciate you coming on. Fun talking about all these high upside running backs.
Well, it's just great that football's actually back now. We got something going on in the field that we can actually talk about as opposed to all the off-field speculation. So that was great.
Okay, guys, we've got another show coming up later this week with John Paulson of 4for4, another one of our most accurate experts. So make sure you tune in for that. Subscribe and review us on iTunes if you haven't already for the contest, the Amari Cooper signed jersey giveaway from Pristine Auction. It's at contest@fantasypros.com for the screenshot. Thanks again to the sponsors of today's show, Pristine Auction, YourRules.com, and TeamStake.com. For Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football.
I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a pool full of your love. I don't even know how the chemistry works when your rules are kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.